welcome to Middle Age Geeks, a podcast where we aim to talk about and review movies, video games, TV shows, basically anything that takes our fancy in any given week. My name is Phil, and I'm joined as always by my trusty co-host, Daz. Daz, how are you?
I'm very good, man. Very good. Looking forward to getting stuck into a good movie this week. And yeah, happy days. Yeah. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been a quiet week, but yeah, I think when we talked about your wife's comment about us, we only watch bad movies.
Yeah,
I'm delighted to say that this week's one is not a bad movie, and
also
hopefully the one we're going to see next week should be good as well. So before we get into what we're planning to do, I'll just give people a little rundown in case it's something you want to skip ahead to. What we're going to be doing this week is a review of Late Night with the Devil. Which just came out, and apparently a very short run in the cinemas, definitely here in Ireland anyway. And then for the Retro Corner, we're going to stay on that Devil theme, and we're going to go all the way back to 2001 for Devil May Cry on the PlayStation 2.
Oh, super.
So, yes, that should be good fun. Dazzle, we'll talk more about what we're going to be doing in the movie, how spoilery it's going to be, our review. But for the moment, before we get into that, Daz, why don't you let us know what you've been kind of playing and watching for the past week?
Yeah, I haven't been watching much, but playing, it's funny you're saying Devil May Cry there, because what I was playing just last night, I played the Stellar Blade demo. Well, I attempted to play it. I know it's a game you were looking forward to. It's a futuristic third person action adventure game following this woman protagonist and her squad to try and take back Earth, futuristic kind of setting. And I thought this game, going in from what I'd seen, I thought it was something along the lines of like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry or Nier Automata, crazy kind of action button mashing madness, which is always immensely pleasing. But it's actually more like a Souls game, which kind of took me aback.
Okay.
There's a lot of emphasis on parrying and dodging and timing and stuff like that, and I played it on medium difficulty, but I had an awfully hard time with the combat. Even it's a demo, the tutorial, you're getting through, but then you start getting kind of early they're not even bosses, but it became quite tricky. I'm just not into those games that much, and I kind of dumbed it down to easy then. But games like that don't work on easy, because the fun is in timing and the parries and getting that those button inputs correct, and that's what you get from it, essentially. So that kind of, it was a bit strange, because it kind of does a lot of the hand-holding for you in terms of parrying when you dumb it down to easy. So, but yeah.
I think they did that with Devil May Cry. I think they did that with the reboot they did, Devil May Cry, the one they just called DMC. Because, like you said, that timing and everything is very much part of the first game. But when it got to DMC, I think obviously it must be just to make it more accessible to everybody. The timing didn't really matter as much, and it was a lot easier to hit your combos and set things up. And of course, that's what the challenge was in the first one. But yeah, I do still want to play that game. I love the look of it, Stellar Blade.
I
kind of pictured something similar to Scarlet. Did you ever play Scarlet Nexus? I thought maybe it might have been something like that.
No,
that's a decent one. I think that's on Game Pass. It's a decent game. You kind of play it through, and two different protagonists, and you kind of their stories overlap. So you'll give the game two playthroughs, basically. And you kind of get it from a different side of the story. Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah, but you can't really escape talking about Stellar Blade without touching on the protagonist Eve's look. Like, she's an incredibly voluptuous and well endowed lady, and the game is obviously aimed kind of towards a certain demographic, maybe, but she is pretty badass, cool dialogue and action cutscenes. But it's like what's that fighting game, Dead or Alive, that kind of stuff, where it's just like jiggle physics. It's fair play, interesting. But then shifting completely to the opposite side of that, I haven't been playing anything, but I've been watching my daughter after trying to play Mario Kart with her, which I've chatted to you before about, which when you have kids, it's always, in the back of your mind, you want to chase them around, the beach and stuff like that. And then eventually you want to play video games with them because that's one of my loves. And trying to play Mario Kart with her last year, it's just a fucking train wreck because she just doesn't care as much as I do. And she's just like going backwards and shit. And just like, look, I go backwards. And just knows she's kind of pissing me off and the competitive streak of me. I'm just like, you're in fucking 12th. Come on. So she started playing Peppa Pig. So I've spent many hours watching her play Peppa Pig and having to direct her from the house to the, she's like, Daddy, where's the playground? She's like, oh, fucking hell, we got to go through a mini game to get the playground.
Is she getting it? Is she understanding it? Like, she's getting
absolutely. She's getting it now.
Like, I'm mushing her.
Yeah, no, she's getting it now. When she's like, with Mario Kart, when she first started, she didn't know if she was going forwards or backwards. But then, you know, she's 4 and 2 weeks, so she's getting Peppa now, and she knows when to stop the controller. And how far to push it. And when she sees the A prompt, she's just like, press A. I'm just like, cool. So just next I have to get her onto Rainbow Road and Mario Kart and get her to do a flawless fucking lap of that. But
yeah, I don't even want to play that. Fuck that.
Yeah. But apart from that, I didn't watch too much at all, apart from the movie. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, fairly chill week. I haven't been, I think I mentioned this to you, I haven't really gotten back into any big games, but I did get drawn back in again to fucking Marvel Snap, which is just, it's so fucking addictive, that game, I swear to God. It's like, you pick it up, just have a quick, because the games are only 3 minutes long, you know, and so that's it, like, I'll pick it up, have a go, and then it's, one more game, or if I get beaten, I'll have to go back and have another game, and you know, I'm fucking terrible at poker, you know, which is why I'm not very good at this game. Like, I will get the high score, I get infinite or whatever, but it's just fun playing with your own, you're playing with your Marvel characters, making your own deck and all the, they all get their own special visual and audio effects and stuff. It's just, it's just crazy addictive. So I've only really been playing, that's really all I've been playing. I've kind of been busy running around after the dog and stuff this week, so I haven't even watched a whole lot, just fucking streaming different things, catching up on old, rewatching some older stuff, but not really watching anything new. I suppose before we move on to the main section, I did want to thank everybody again for all the feedback we've been getting. Just to say, I had no idea that one of the most controversial things we would do on here would be to slate Argyle. I don't really go on TikTok, but as you were saying, I had to look at the comments on our Argyle video on TikTok, and most people, that's where it loads of engagement. People are not happy we did not like Argyle, which is wild to me. Like, if we've slated better movies than that, is really that it's so interesting to me that Argyle is the one, and I'm sure that Matthew Vaughn would be very happy that people, you know, are defending his movie on the internet. But like, some of you really should have gone and fucking seen the thing, like, you know, because it only made 100 million and it needed to break even, needed to make between, I think, 450, 500 million it needed to make break even, and it made 100.
Not a lot of people watched
it. It did really bad critically as well as commercially. Like, it was so bad. So just thought, of all the ones for people to like and us not to like, so surprised that Argyle was the one, you know?
Yeah, so must put up a Madam Web little short on TikTok and just see the furore that happens to that one. Just, you know, you never know.
Yeah, fucking hell. But yeah, we'll keep that feedback going. It's great getting the comments and emails and all the rest of it. Like, so keep that up. But look, yeah, just with that intro out of the way, what we'll do then is jump on into the main section, which is our movie review. And Daz is going to take us through that. So Daz, whenever you're ready, take us on.
Happy days. Thank you, Phil. Yeah, this week's movie is Late Night with the Devil. This is actually suggested by Phil last week to me, and I had never even heard of it. I hadn't seen a trailer. He mentioned it was a horror film, so straight away I was a little bit perturbed about going to see a horror movie in the cinema. But then when he showed the cinema we went to, because it was the last showing of this movie, it was last night. I think it was like 20 seats in a little cinema in Rat Mines. It was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, 23. Just 23 seats. Yeah,
which is fantastic. But the movie is written and directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns, two Aussie filmmakers who only had two films between them: 100 Bloody Acres and Scare Campaign from 2012, 2016, respectively. And it's a movie that there's still no budget online. I couldn't find an actual budget for it, but they said it's made a healthy 2 or 3 million kind of on the opening weekend in Europe, which is very good for a low budget horror film. It's a beautifully brisk runtime of 92 minutes, which is fucking great. Like, flew by.
It did, but I'm so pissed off. It got such a short run in the cinemas here. Yeah. You know, I thought we'd have, you know, because I feel like it just came out over here, like last week maybe, and it's already gone.
Was it like March 22nd or the week of March 22nd, 23rd? It came out. I think it was out in America for a few months.
Here, though.
It's.
I don't think it came out here the 26th, 22nd of March, did it?
Maybe it was just some territories in Europe or something, but it's down as a 2023 movie in the States. And it's one of them. Kind of reminds you of years and years ago when, you know, a movie would be out in the States a few months beforehand and then it would come out here 3 months later. And within 10 days, something else has pushed it out, or it's in, you know, limited small screening somewhere, which is a shame, because as Phil said, after some pretty poor reviews of late, piss poor to average reviews of movies. I was a little worried going into a low budget horror, completely blind. But yeah, it's delightful to be able to say it's a fucking treat of a movie. I thought this movie was absolutely fucking brilliant. Little setup for it. The movie follows our protagonist, Jack Delroy, a late night TV show host who is struggling to resurrect his failing TV show and ratings, and thus his career. So he decides to go for an all-out special Halloween episode during Sweeps Week in America, where all sponsors and ratings really count in terms of keeping shows on the air. And he decides to invite a parapsychologist and an apparent possessed teenage girl onto the show for the first time ever on live TV. And shit just gets weirder and weirder the longer the show goes on. This movie deserves to be seen by everyone. It plays out like an actual TV show from 1977, wonderfully presented and realized with like excellent sets. And I even noticed it was projected in like 4:3 aspect ratio, like old TVs, which is another cool thing about it. And it kind of semi revitalizes the long dead found footage genre in a way, and marries it with, you know, some excellent performances, which we'll get into, and some brilliantly judged suspense. And it just gets the tone perfectly right without resorting to the need for jump scares or anything like that. What did you think? What were your first thoughts? Oh, before we chat about it, we're going to try and not go full spoilers on this. We're going to chat maybe at the first two acts of the movie and not try and talk too much about the final act or the final 15 minutes. We will kind of gloss over certain aspects, but most of the stuff we'll chat about, you've probably seen in the trailer. So hopefully that works, because there's so much to talk about.
I think that's a good idea, because there is people out there who want to watch it. Like this movie is presented by Shudder, which is like an American streaming fucking network that you can sign up to. It's like a Netflix kind of vibe, but it's for sci-fi horror. So a lot of really independent stuff, you know, in place things will get on there. But they presented this movie, and it's going to come out on their service, I think, on the 18th of April. So it's not too far away. You know,
brilliant.
It may be something so if you could even sign up for one of those trial accounts, you know, for Shudder, if it's not your cup of tea that you don't watch a lot of horror, maybe sign up for a trial account to check this movie out, because, you know, it's, as we're going to get into, it is very good. And my initial thoughts on it, though, I loved it. I mean, I had obviously said it to you, a friend of ours, obviously D who had started on, was on the show before. She had messaged me a couple of weeks ago about it, saying, and I said, yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it for a while. You know, I'd seen it pop up, and I'm trying not to know too much about it, just to go into what I heard. It was incredibly unique and original. I was enamored from the moment it started, you know, from the Michael Ironside voiceover, everything, that 70s aesthetic. I loved 70s stuff. Like, so that whole aesthetic, the grainy film, you know, that obviously it switches to black and white when they're, it's for the back, for the non-found footage stuff, we get it, you know, it's sort of the black and white. All of those scenes, like, it's so incredibly well acted, by for the most part, a lot of people besides is David Dashmalkian. I'm going to get his name wrong a bunch of times. Like a lot of these actors, for me, I hadn't noticed. I remember one of the guys I recognized from the Matrix Revolutions, but most of the actors I don't know from anything.
Absolutely. Like he's
Did
like
you?
David Dasmalchian, he's that actor that's like he's always on the periphery of a cast, not even quite getting a supporting role, but every time he's in something, he very captivating, like straight away just from The Dark Knight and one of the Joker's thugs, and he gets that scene with Two-Face. I think he's fucking phenomenal in it. He's like maybe two or three lines in that scene, but he's just the look of him, his eyes, is just
Yeah.
absolutely fantastic. I thought he was amazing, and
I think
that's
his
like
biggest
when
role was
movies
probably
started.
is Suicide Squad. You know, he played
Yeah,
the
from
Polka Dot Man.
Polka
I
Dot
think that might
Man.
have been
Yeah,
quite
yeah,
his
yeah.
biggest role I've seen him in, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was excellent in that. But he, yeah, the minute the movie started, when I got a glimpse of him, I was just like, ah. So I have this, I'd obviously seen an image somewhere of him as a TV talk show host, but didn't think of, that this was the horror, that was a horror film. But yeah, like we it was a lovely laugh before the movie even started. It was almost like a parody with like when you see low budget movies and you see the logo intros and it's like, oh yeah, C Films, you
Yeah.
know, and then it's the next one and the next one. The nine fucking logo animations before the movie even started.
How many people
Just
are
like,
involved
fuck
in this movie?
it hell. Yeah. Made from the producers of this, made by this, maybe just like fucking hell. But it then cuts into, as you were saying, the Michael Ironside narration, where he kind of sets the scene. And this is, I think it's like 7 or 8 minutes long. And this is, it's the best opening montage scene I've ever seen, I think, in my entire life. In the space of this amount of time, it sets everything perfectly up. It, like, it shows that, you know, Jack is a budding talk show host. He has a small talk show and it does quite well, and then he signs with like a bigger network. It kind of hints at like tabloid news reports that he's like joined some kind of cult or the Grove Men's Club or something like that, and it comes back maybe later on. But it yeah, it's just it starts like it's 1971 when he has his own talk show, and then it shows that his the rating's starting to fail because he's trying to fight with Johnny Carson, the Battle of the Late Night
Yeah.
talk show hosts in the 70s, and which is fantastic. But as his ratings start to fall, you see, and this is all in the first, you know, 5, 6 minutes, that his wife gets cancer, and then like a totally believable thing that they would do, like he gets his wife to come on the show as she's dying, which is exactly what an American talk show host would do, or a talk show would do, producers would do to get the ratings up. She's on the show and then she passes away, and he takes a month long break, and then they cut back to, it's 1977, I think it's like the seventh season of the show, and it's his, yeah, the show is maybe about to be cancelled, and this sweeps week, which I didn't know too much about, which is when, you know, ratings really matter, and sponsors are sometimes in the audience and stuff, and it's, yeah, shows are succeed or fail a lot during this week. You know, if you don't get your ratings up, you're cancelling it the next week. But when it, we then get the intro, like this is all narrated by Michael Ironside, but then we get
Yeah, he kind
the
of,
premise comes to the
before we get
fore.
into the main thing, before we get into that premise though, he does, Michael Ironside does let us know, because I wasn't aware that this was going to be a lot of found footage. And Michael Ironside is what he says, what, you know, what follows is an actual live, you know, is a recording of an actual live episode that went out. And so straight away I was like, oh, great. And I was, a little part of me was worried because, you know, found footage can be so hit or miss.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
oh shit, this is going to be fucking shaky nonsense. What is it going to be? But no, it's exactly how shows do go out like that, where they cut to have messages and stuff like that. And it was just, was that proper grainy kind of film camera and exactly how it would have looked. You know, people are looking to turn to the right camera, all that kind of stuff. It's very, it's spot on. You get that little, you know, thing Mark comes up at the start, you know, and it's just, it's, he sets it up perfectly. He's got such great tone to his voice, Michael Ironside. And as you said, we're in 8 minutes, we're condensed this whole, like, not only is he talking about the show, he's talking about what's going on in America at the time, you know, with the satanic panic that was going on in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Like, there were so many serial killers in America in the 70s, it's insane, you know. And
such a dark fucking time. About,
and if the, you know, yeah, he mentions that you see Son of Sam in one of the clips, like, it's real. Mm-hmm. It's, he's talking, he gives you a massive condensed amount of information, but so give it so succinctly and so with a lot of weight to it. It was like, right, that's me set up perfectly, you know. Yeah. I know exactly where we land. There's no kind of, but wait, he didn't give enough to this, or what is this? It just sets you up, gives you everything you need to know.
Yep.
And and then you're just blank. Then you're just, when the show starts, now you're into the show, and you've just been armed with all the information, but not, it didn't feel like a fucking overload being pushed down your throat, where, you know, if you see a sci-fi movie and maybe it's saying, fucking the Blorgons from planet have been done, and you're trying to look through this fucking history and remember everything because it's going to matter later on. You know, whereas this is not, it's perfectly, it's just the right amount. It's just a lovely setup before we're then passed on to the movie. It's a really, really great intro. I was a big fan.
Yeah, it really is. Like, when you get, that was the whole, the shock to me, where, you know, where he's given so much of this introduction, so much of the information across to you, it's just like, where the fuck is this going? Is what's left to tell? Yeah, that's what he said. Like, the footage is now, the actual aired, you know, it's been unaired, unwatched actual footage from the last show. And I can't remember how he set up the name of it. I think it was, is the last show was named, or there was this was being put together as part of a documentary to show the last show of Night Owls, David Cho. But he said but it was named Late Night with the Devil. And yeah, the movie is the unreleased tape of the show. And it's a brilliant thing, because then what transpires then is about 80 to 85 minutes of a TV show, full TV show with logos and everything. And the director said, like, they had 20 days in a studio. They had the studio set up, and it's just one location, and they just filmed it all like a TV show. And even David Dasmalchian, I was watching something, an interview with him last night with Christian Harloff on YouTube, where he was talking about his trepidation about picking the role, and that he never watches himself. He has a problem watching he's never proud of his performances. You know, a lot of actors kind of are.
Yeah.
But he said he was so proud of the fact that he took this job, because when he looked at it, you know, he said actors, they all want to play all weird and wonderful characters and, you know, stretch themselves as much as they can. But the one thing, when he just read, like, I'm a talk show host, and I've got to do, like, be believable as a fucking talk show host, just said that just terrified him, like, completely. So the fact that he actually, and he said he had, like, luckily he had two or three months to actually properly prepare for this. And yeah, then Christian said, like, well, you don't have to be worried, like, because you fucking nailed it. And he absolutely fucking nailed it. He's 100%. He's excellent. But the minute he comes out onto screen, you're just like, here we go. There's no, like, there's no easing into, is he going to find his feet, or is he believable? He's just straight away, it's just absolutely believable. He's just fucking fantastic. And it's the music setup of the show and everything. And it's just brilliant. Because they play it like he comes out, he's introduced, he has a couple of jokes with his, you know, Gus, his right-hand man. There's an audience in the studio, so this all plays absolutely perfectly. And then he starts to introduce his guests, because the whole thing, and imagine if you'd seen the trailer, you're thinking about, when are they going to get into this crazy demonic kind of stuff? But they take their time with this, because they play it out like a normal show, as you would with a normal show. You have, like, you start with an introductory guest and maybe two guests, and then you get to your main piece. So our first guest that comes out is Chris Du. This guy is fucking fantastic. Again, as you said, I'd never even seen. I don't even know what this guy looks like in real life, but brilliant.
I thought he looked like Oscar Isaac. I was looking at him going, Matt, this motherfucker looks just like Oscar Isaac. but he's, I mean, and I think as well, we should say, like, the reason that they're having all these things on as well is that it's a special Halloween episode. They make lots of references to that. So the audience are all dressed in costumes as well, and
yeah
there's some really cheesy calls to it. Like, at one part the camera cuts back and someone has a prop of a bat, you know, and they just go like this and they move it up towards the camera. Like, and it's just, you know, it's just the cheapest fucking possible thing to do is to make it the spookiest night ever. Because that's why he brings your man Christu out, and Christu says, like, that Halloween is kind of the night where, like a lot of movies say, and like, I suppose the lore in general says that, you know, Halloween is the night where the barrier between the realm of the dead and the realm of the living is at its thinnest, where we can commune the most. And so that's what he's going to do, like a psychic reading thing. And this whole thing is fucking brilliant. It's the awkwardness of him, you know, of the finding the cold reading and stuff, and you know, getting kind of called out on a little bit. You know, like, is there a Daz Murphy here? I mean, Daz Murphy, and just, you know, and it's just trying to get something that sounds almost similar to it, and it's just really obvious Cole reading, and it's done so well, and he's brilliant. I don't know him from anything.
He's fantastic.
I look him up because I thought he was great. Like,
he looks like every kind of mystic psychic medium guy from the fucking 70s or 80s you've ever seen, like completely like overdressed for the part, looking like, it just looks like a, you know, a magician. Absolutely looks like a magician, but he's brilliant. Yeah. And that, like, he gets to a moment with two of the audience members where he connects with something that they've said. You know, he kind of misfires in the first, and then he connects with them about, you know, again, about these things that are quite specific. Oh, is there somebody who passed away recently, blah blah blah. And you find out later on that, like, everyone's asked questions once they come in and fill out questionnaires and all this stuff. So it's just like, oh, okay. But then he has kind of a shit fit then before they're cutting to break. He goes, hold on, you know, I'm getting something really strong. And he really fucking sells this, like, that he's something seriously fucking happening.
Eyes are rolling.
Here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So his eyes go fucking proper roll back. I was like, Jesus. It's that's a really cool scene, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and he says there's a name like Minnie, and no one in the audience kind of gets it, but it's not really apparent what he's talking about there, but he's an obvious fucking distress. So then we get an idea of the kind of duality of the scenes where they break to commercial and then it shifts to black and white, which is fucking brilliant, and it just goes to backstage shots, and there's the producer is introduced here, who's fucking brilliant. I don't know who the hell he is either. Yeah,
no, he's fucking class. Yeah, he's great. Yeah, he's such a dickhead. I thought he was brilliant. Yeah, because he's just proper ass. Like, all he cares about is the ratings. Like, even if, you know, like, if someone had fucking died on the show, he wouldn't care. You know, it's for him, it's all about the ratings of it. And it's just, you know, he just comes across like an absolute bellend. But I still absolutely loved him. I thought it was a cracking performance. Like.
Yeah, it's but then after they cut back to the show, we get introduced to our second guest, who is Carmichael. Again, it's just a fantastically cheesy he's kind of a magician and illusionist turned debunker.
It's based on a real guy. It's based on a real guy. It was a real actual performer, and then who, like, that
James Randi or something.
And he ended up like that going in, and it was he had that famous offer as well, where he was offering anybody money if they could prove their supernatural ability, then he'd give them a check, and that's what he's doing in this. It reminds me of, you know, if just a small sidetrack, but me and Daz were in Blackpool a few years ago. We were walking down the strip to go to this like Star Trek convention thing, and there was like five or six shop mediums. We're all sort of set up next to each other. And I was just thinking, like, of all the places in the world for them to be such a hub of psychoactive fucking, of psychic abilities, it's the fucking beachfront in a thing.
The
it's
just, strip,
it's
man.
Just that, like, yeah, it's just so funny that these people all work on the same premise that he's talking about. He's saying, yeah, it's all sleight of hand. It's all getting knowledge, as you said before the show. Or it's all, like, now a lot of people will say, oh, my psychic has a two week waiting list because they're so busy. And I said, well, no, you sign up today. They've got 2 weeks then to go on to your social media, your mate's social media. They're looking RIP.ie. They're looking at you getting a new job on LinkedIn. They're looking at all this stuff. So all they have to do is knock out one or two of those for you, and you're how could they possibly know that? And now you believe everything they say. And they prey on vulnerable
people.
It's
so suggestive.
And that's that's his job. He's coming in and saying, no, Christu, you're talking bollocks. You're out of your mind. Yeah. You know, you're just trying to scandies per people. And again, it's the Christo obviously knows that he's a charlatan, but like the how he reacts as well. He reacts, "How dare you!" Like, it's just that real over the top thing. And he's just great, man. I'm loving him. Yeah, your man Christo. I thought he was great. Yeah.
And the interplay between the two of them was fantastic. But then, like Christo is obviously still a little bit distressed, and goes to leave the stage. Well, we could just say he has a little episode as he tries to leave the stage, and is let's just say he's taken ill and taken backstage. And again, we cut to the break again, and it's we're trying to set up the next the main part of the show, essentially, which is going to be, we'll just skip forward to it's a parapsychiatrist, a psychologist. Is that her name?
Parapsychologist, I think. Isn't that what
parapsychologist?
I think, isn't that what Lorraine and what's his thing from the Conjuring movies are? I think that's what they call themselves, parapsychologists.
Okay,
they're actually name dropped in it. Yeah, they're name dropped, the two of them that the Conjuring movies are based on. Carmichael. Actually, Carmichael is the guy who was from, he said, as Kane from Matrix Revolutions. He was brilliant in this.
He's fantastic.
He name drops them. I think it's, what is it? I can't even think. It's Lorraine and something. I can't think of the name. Anyway, he name drops them in it, but I'm pretty sure parapsychologist is the term that they use, yeah.
Cool. But it's the parapsychologist is June Mitchell, and she has with her a little teenage girl called Lily. And June Mitchell has written a book called Conversations with the Devil. And they tell us that Lily was a sole survivor of a kind of cult church mass suicide. It burned down the building or whatever. And she was like the sole survivor. So
yeah, it's what we see in the intro, isn't it? It's what we see in the intro. We see the cult and we see it's part of that whole satanic panic thing. And one girl kind of got carried out. They set this part up really in the intro, or Michael Ironside does.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get her name because this little girl, where is her? Ingrid Torelli.
Her first performance.
She has no history in anything. And I have to say, this fucking she is unfucking believable. When she comes out, she's doing this kind of nervous energy, and she keeps just looking at the camera, you know, and Jack's like, "No, just, you know, don't look at the camera, look at me," but she just still kind of just glimpses over at the camera. And it's just, especially watching it on a big screen, straight away I'm just going, "Oh, fucking hell, I don't like her." I really don't like her in terms of like, I'm not a big horror movie fan anyway, but in terms of like these creepy kids and stuff, it's always overdone, and it's just like, oh yeah. But this was just, she was fucking fantastic. She sold it so well that just like she's going to be an absolute fucking nightmare to deal with in a few minutes. I know, but I couldn't take my eyes off her. And it was so unnerving. Yeah. And like nothing really happens for a while, but there's, what did you think of her? Cause I think I leaned over to you and said, she's the creepiest fucker I've ever seen.
Cause even the parts where she's smiling, she's able to do this smile, like, but it's this big, massively overly cheery smile. But like at the same time, her eyes are completely fucking dead. Like there's nothing behind there, or what's behind there isn't good. But I thought she really, really sold it. And like, again, I said, for something that's her debut performance, I thought that she was really, really good. But yeah, like that overly cheery kind of smile and stuff, you're like, okay, man, this obviously something nuts is about that guy is going to go down with her very shortly.
The tone ever so slightly kind of shifts then, from kind of the kind of slapstick. It's almost like Alan Partridge meets the Exorcist is when we're somewhere in the middle ground of this, and it's just like, this is kind of fun. Like, and then when she comes out, it takes a turn.
Yeah, you're right. You are getting that awkwardness between, you know, because they're trying to sell it like a real TV show. So someone, it's not being cut in any particular certain way. So when it's all going out live, you know. So when he says something and gets a weird reaction from somebody, he does make a little bit of a joke, either to the audience or to whatever. Because he's a professional. It's his job, like any host from any show, is they're professional to keep shit moving. It's like a comedian who gets heckled and he knows to say something to shut it down and to move it on. And it's very much shot in that way. And it's it just comes across so well, like that, even for her little weird comments she's making and stuff. He is playing to her so well. David Dash-Malkin is it's great, their little interplay between them. And you can really feel the tension between him and the doctor, because obviously you can see there's a little bit of intimacy when she first arrives and when they're coming out the stage, and we find out a little while later they have kind of been hooking up. But there is, there's just, you can feel the kind of thing there where the doctor almost maybe doesn't want people to know that this stuff exists and is real. But at the same time,
she's nervous. You know, the doctor is definitely nervous being there.
And she sees, I think, that as you said at the very top of the show, Daz, that this is, it's all about what you got to do to get the ratings. You know, so for our host, and for definitely for Leo, the manager, having this fucking devil, this person come on that apparently has a devil or a demon inside her, is big news. It's big ratings. It's sweeps week. It's sponsorship. For her, she wants people to know this shit is real. But at the same time, she has basically adopted this child. This child has been in her care, you know. And so you can kind of see there is that kind of conflict in the two, where she's very proud of the role that she's done and she defends herself against Carmichael. But at the same time, she pulls back when the show kind of were about actually having her on and doing bringing this thing out of Lily. And it's great. I really, you could feel that tension between them. She really, you could feel the uncomfortableness coming from her. It was a really good performance again from the doctor.
Yeah. And when they cut to, because the little girl, that nervous energy with the host Jack and the little girl and all three of them just on the show, and Carmichael is still there at the, like, and while they're talking about the demon possessed inside her, and she's talking like, I call it Mr. Wriggles because he wriggles into my head and then wriggles his way out, and then Carmichael is still like, this is buffoonery and nonsense, and you're kind of like, dude, shut the fuck up, man. Can you not see her, dude? Looking into her eyes, man. It's just, for fuck's sake. But the little girl's even just like, oh, you know, yeah, June thinks you're really, really handsome, Jack, you know, and just gives him an eerie look, and you're just like, oh, fucking hell. And that's, the interplay between the three of them is so spot on, where June is just like, okay, I'm doing this just to talk about this because maybe the book is out, but I want to get her off fucking stage because, as we later find out, like, she's almost like a guardian for the girl, and she kind of keeps her in check almost, and she doesn't want her obviously being on fucking late night TV because she's seen what can happen with this little girl. When we cut to the break, then again we go backstage and we do see the producer, Leo, pushing to take it further and to do this possession, and June is just like, no, I'm not comfortable with this at all. And that's where Jack's desperation really comes true, because you see him on stage and he's, you know, as you were saying, he's so professional and managing the show perfectly well. And you can see why he would be really good talk show host and charismatic. But behind the scenes, you could start to see he's kind of frazzled a little bit, where you see the desperation starts to come through. And he pushes for he just said, look, let's just go ahead with this demonstration or whatever. And then we go back to the show. We get the demonstration, the main thing that they're all building up to. And it's just super creepy. It's so well done. They like dim all the lighting and, you know, give it a really moody and sinister look. And June then is sitting just across from Lily and goes ahead with the demonstration to try and release the demon or whatever. And this is very, you've seen a lot of this stuff before in terms of the kind of body morphing, where she's kind of acting. She's like, you can see the demon kind of coming out of her as she kind of changes her shoulder shape and stuff like that. But it's because it's played as a live TV show. It's not a scene from a horror film. So it's not overproduced, or, you know, as I was saying, there's no like, it's all just there raw live as if you're watching it, and it's not played, you know, with any musical cues or any of this kind of histrionics or any of this kind of cheap horror stuff. It's played where you just hear the voice, and it's this kind of dual tone voice. And this is the moment where it starts to venture into horror. But what I've loved
into the supernatural, you know, because it's like the chair levitates and everything. Like, we've kind of gone so far into, you know, Christu, who's obviously, you know, like I said, he's a medium, you know, like, he's not really doing anything. It's just it's a skill that he has, you know, that to be theatrical and stuff. And as Carmichael says, he's calling it out. To this point, we haven't got anything supernatural right up until this point. Until now, you know, she has the apparent demon inside her, and she even levitates in the chair that she's strapped to. It's fucking cool scene. It really is.
It's just it's just very creepy. You don't want to give too much away, but everyone after the demonstration and June gets Lily back, let's say, everyone is a bit kind of a bit shocked in the audience and on the crew. And as like some of the, I think Gus, his Jack's assistant guy, tells him like backstage, he's kind of like, some people are just, they just want to leave, want to fucking go home. They're just like, this is getting a bit fucking weird, you know? Because obviously the audience are going, oh, you know, what's happened with this levitating fucking chair? But everyone in the crew is just going, who was that? You was that part of the show? What the fuck is happening?
Leo just plays it off. Leo's like, well, look, you know, if you liked it or it went well, then I'll take credit for it. You know,
sleaze bag fucking producer. Like, but it's at this point actually, after that demonstration or just during it, the last thing I wrote in my notes is, demonstration, creepiest shit ever. And I have no notes after this because I was just like, fucking, all right, I'm in this now. I was too fucking scared that I was going to get a jump scare or something while I was typing and throw my phone across the fucking tiny cinema. But when we go back to the show, the Carmichael actually, this is where he kind of goes, okay, look, I can, this is all just fucking trickery and blah, blah, blah. I can, smoke and mirrors, and I can show you how this is done. So he proceeds to do a little hypnotizes Gus. And again, this gets really creepy and gross and pretty weird. We won't go into it too much, but he showcases that, like...
Yeah, I would ask on that, just, we don't have to go into a massive amount about what actually happens. But because of the color change in the camera, right? Because this camera, what we're seeing in the live show is supposedly what was recorded, okay? Yep. And so all that stuff that happens is in color. So it's supposed to be that we, as in the fourth wall audience, we're being hypnotized because, you know, he shows back later what actually happened to prove that it's smoke and mirrors. I can make you all see this stuff. And they're like, holy shit, we all saw this. But all of
cameras
us
don't
in the cinema,
lie,
in Rat Minds. Yeah, so it's been us in the cinema in Rat Minds are supposedly being hypnotized as well because we're seeing this and the color part of the camera, which is supposedly being caught. So it's played out that it's us being hypnotized as well, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And he does have the fucking harks back to that iconic hypnotizing the pocket watch, which is just fantastic. It's a few little visual gag where he does a few little tricks with the pocket watch and it turns into that kind of spiral hypnotizing kind of rotating thing, which is, when you watch that on a big screen, it is quite fucking hypnotizing. You're just like, what? Looking into it. But so, yeah, and he demonstrates then that it is all kind of smoke and mirrors. And when you play back the actual camera footage, what everyone in the audience saw and on stage saw and what Gus saw when he was hypnotized is not actually true because you play it back through the cameras. So then I think, is it Lily suggests, like, but you know, if it is all smoke and mirrors, maybe if you watch back the footage of the possession, you know, the demonstration, she said, Carmichael, you said like the cameras don't lie. Maybe we'll have a look back and see what the cameras actually saw. And they look back. And of course, you still see what you saw, and Carmichael is taken aback. And he's like, obviously, there's some trickery at work here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And and it's during that where, looking back at the footage, somehow Lily starts to, or the demon starts to manifest, or maybe Mr. Wriggles starts to wriggle ever more. And I'm not too sure how much we talk about the next kind of 15 minutes, but it just goes
Like, I was even already thinking about the stuff that happens while they're watching that tape and all the rest. But I don't think we need to go into the specifics of the last act and where it goes and what actually happens. And But it's just like the overall general feel of the movie, even up to this point, it's just perfect. I felt the pacing was great. I mean, the ending, obviously, because we're starting to get into the supernatural stuff, and then we get into the ending, and you're kind of left a little bit to kind of wonder a little bit about what was real, what isn't, and da da da. But it's really well done. I liked them just when I heard you say the Mr. Wiggles thing. It's obviously a call to The Exorcist, like The Exorcist, the devil or the demon, Pazuzu inside of Regan is called Captain Howdy. So it's like a cute, cutesy name for this thing. I assume it's a nod to this horrible being being given such a cutesy name. But like, I'd be interested to see what the budget was for this movie. It can't have been very high. But it's every penny of it is so well spent. There's nothing in this where I'm kind of gone, oh, you know, like obviously there's some effects where I think when they do the effects, right? Because there is some supernatural effects that we see, especially around her, they look like they're supposed to. They don't look like you're trying to make modern day VFX. It almost looks like it's 70s or 80s VFX should look like, you know, and how that would look on grainy film. And it's just there's something really cool about it, the way the electricity shoots, and it's just really, really old style movie kind of stuff that you would see. Yeah, and I really appreciated that. I thought that was excellent. It's just a fantastic movie. It was really a breath of fresh air from the horror we watched. Like I mentioned, I go to see a lot of horror. I went most recently to that Night Swim, which for some reason I think Empire gave that 4 stars, 3 or 4 stars. Night Swim,
Who
I don't
said that
understand
was
that at
pretty poor?
all.
That the possessed
Haunted
swimming
swimming
pool or
pool.
some shit?
It's a bad
It
movie.
just sounds fucking awful.
But it's been a while since we've gotten a really kind of newer kind of something different from a horror, you know. And I think that when stuff like Hereditary came along or It Follows, you know, stuff like that, it's throwing out something a little different. And when it works, it's all I when it's well received. Even when it doesn't really work, I still receive it quite well because we've seen horror played out to death so much. You know, they didn't go anywhere near. There wasn't any jump scares in this movie. You know, and
No,
I do love a jump scare,
that's the best
but it
thing
was
about this movie is that that it's so confident in its confident that it can hold not only your attention, but it's that you're going to buy into the suspense. There's no jump scares, there's no music cues or any of that. What I think are kind of cheap parlor tricks for the most part. I don't mind one or two. If there wasn't this, it would have been fine. But it's more just it's just situational horror, and it's I wouldn't like it does there are horror elements to it, but it's more kind of a psychological supernatural fucking drama for the best part thriller. You know, it's just it plays out. It plays it so. It's just so confident in its pacing as well. It doesn't jump in so quickly to the key moments like it that they would showcase in a trailer for that matter. And I think that's all down to that first intro that just sets up. It just gives you so much. I remember during that, I kept just thinking, I couldn't stop thinking about that intro. Just going, this is just it's just perfect. It's not 2 minutes. It's not fucking 10 minutes, like 7 or 8 minutes where it's just sets you up perfectly, and then the movie can start slow because you've not been overwhelmed, but you've gotten so much stuff that you are taking in that the movie can just kind of take its time, which was fantastic. But yeah, the pacing of it I thought was just phenomenal. The set design, the music is it's just yeah. I remember at one point just and I'd never do it in a movie that I'm enjoying, to break the immersion, whatever. But I just leaned over to you and said, "This is fucking brilliant." You were just like, "Yeah, fuck it is." I was so pleasantly surprised, and I've been thinking about it all last night and all today. And yeah, I think it's one of the best films I've seen in quite some time, in especially in that genre, in for a low budget horror slash psychological drama thriller thing, talk show. It's amazing. And David D Dalmanchian, is amazing in this. I think it's absolutely amazing, but not as I think, as we said, not in a way that it's going to get awards, attention or anything like that, because it's not a showy performance. It's all in the kind of nuance of the uncomfortable moments of him actually portraying a real life TV, a believable TV host in a believable setting that is not editing around him. You know what I mean? You see his uncomfortable bits throughout. But yeah, I think cast are brilliant. Everything's brilliant about it. Even the music, the theme tune of the show is fucking, it's excellent. And it's humming it all the way home.
The commercial breaks, you know, when they cut to the they cut to your, you know, now we're coming back to Night Owls or whatever. Just those, we properly get those little screen cards and that fucking awesome, you know, 70s font and 70s font. It's just it's so well done. And trying to entertain the audience through the break, during the breaks. Mm. And just little things like that. It's just to really sell it across. And there's always little stuff going on in the background. The little hints of what's happening, like you can hear the guy who looks after the sound or whatever on the background, and he's props, and he's talking to someone who we don't really see, and he's saying like, look, yeah, we'll get a fix from down here, look, we're not seeing any issue on our end, and it's constantly, you're just going to hear them saying it, but we don't follow them, and you know that they're seeing interference and they're seeing this because of you know, what's happening. But it's there's so many clever little choices, so many little scenes or things that are just cut in and left in the background that I imagine watching it a few more times, you probably pick up on extra things in it, you know. But it's a wonderful movie. I'm absolutely delighted that we got to see it in the cinema. Delighted I got to see it in the screen with people who were all very respectful. It was a quiet cinema of people who were just sitting there in awe of this, you know, this movie.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely delighted for the genre. It's what I'm delighted for, because I feel like a lot of times I watch horror sometimes because it's shit. Like if it hits five stars on IMDb, I'm like, yeah, I'll fucking watch it. I told you, I adore Deep Blue Sea. Yeah. You know, I will find a lot of joy in horror. But to get something so original, I'm over the moon. I'm over the moon for him because he's fantastic at this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I hope so many more people watch it. I hope it gets a kind of a cult following. But on DVD or DVD fucking on demand.
I guess I don't know if we'll get it on demand on, like, say, Netflix or anything here in Ireland. Because Shudder,
you know,
it's presented by them. It'd be almost like Amazon getting a Netflix movie kind of thing, you know, like a movie that's actually, so I don't know if it's likely to happen.
But it does show there is still life in these the horror genre or horror subgenres, where there's still life for inventive, clever movies like this that can be made for, you know, modest budget, one set, you know, fucking what, 10, 15 cast members. It's just fantastic. And kudos to the directors, because it's another one of those where directors coming off kind of two average reviewed movies over the past 12 years, and then they just bang out this, and it's like, fucking hell, happy days. Give these guys 20 million quid and find more of them and just give them all these kind of budgets, because that's when you get really inventive scripts and movies like this, and it's an absolute gem. I'd give this 5 stars. I fucking loved it. Absolutely loved it.
I know I don't give anything 5 stars, but I will give it a good 4.5, a healthy 4.5. Because it is, it's fantastic. There's nothing, I wasn't watching it thinking I wish X, Y, and Z was done better. It's just a great, great movie. Recommend it. Hits Shudder on the 18th of April. So me and Daz definitely recommend it. And if you want to watch it,
get
yourself,
out and see it.
That's when it will be out. Or maybe in your region, it might still be in the cinema. I don't know. But if it is, check it out. So with all that movie stuff out of the way, what we'll do now is we'll move on now to the Retro Corner. For this week, for the Retro Corner, as I said, I have picked Devil May Cry. So this game for me was absolutely incredible. Like, for anybody who hasn't played this game, you know, before I even get into review, I highly recommend getting on it if you don't know the series. For me, this is the best one in the series. I don't know about you, Dad. Well, this is the best one for me. If you haven't played it, it's kind of a third-person hack-and-slash shooter. Really focused around this kind of gothic aesthetic and battle between good and evil, angels and demons and all this shit, like, you know. Did you play this when it came out, Daz? I know you played some of the sequels.
No, actually, and I don't know if I have played this. I think I might have only played Devil May Cry 2 onwards or 3 onwards, because this came out, was this PS1 or PS2? PS2?
PS2
and 2001,
yeah.
So, yeah, I played about 2 PS2 games over the course of 4 or 5 years.
All right. But this one, I think about 10 or 12 years ago, they did release HD remakes of these, but definitely worth checking it out. Like, I absolutely fell in love with this game. Like, it's very loosely based around the poem, The Divine Comedy, by Dante Alighieri. Anyway, and Dante then, is of course the name of the main character in these games, or for the most part, anyway. And I think even as like a staunch atheist that I am, I still find myself really enjoying anything like movies, video games, TV shows that use Christian philosophy, theology, mythology, you know, around angels and demons and an underworld. And I just love all that shit. I think like those Darksiders games were right up my alley. All the four.
Oh yeah, they're fucking great.
Stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love any of that kind of... I don't know, is it probably disrespectful to someone's religion to call it mythology? But you know what I mean? That kind of side of it is just... I just find that really, really interesting when it's done in a stylized take on it, you know?
When they dial it up to 11,
like you're given the angels and demons fucking shotguns and shit, you know, like Darksiders is fucking insane. You're playing number 4 horsemen, you play as war and you're just going in, ripping these people apart. It's just real over the top, you know, and it's I love that stuff. And the theme that runs through these games is that they're all heavily focused on the combat. As I mentioned, it's like hack and slash, but it's also gunplay as well, and a switch between the two of them. So you're kind of graded as you get to the end of each stage. You're graded on how you did, you know, when you're looking for that kind of, you know, S++ kind of, you know, double S++ or whatever it is kind of it. But you're graded, and the whole grade is based on, you know, consistency, how consistently well you did in that stage. How did you, you know, mixing up your strategy, linking combo moves and weapon play together, and throwing your sword at one guy, and while it's stabbing him, pulling your gun out and shooting another guy, and then the sword comes back to you. You know, all that kind of maximizing what you have in your arsenal gains you more and more a better score at the end of it, and then that gives you more money to spend on, like, you know, upgrading your shit that you can kind of do throughout the game. Like, did you want, because the combat changes in DMC, you know, that one as I said was quite easy, and whereas
I didn't like that one.
It's quite easy in that one, I think. Whereas I think the second Devil May Cry now was shit, but the third one, they get back to it, gets back to being deadly again.
I think it was the third one where I really kind of tapped into, because obviously on the outside looking in as a Nintendo nut, it's kind of like, you know, trying to play it down, but looking at people playing this game, it's kind of going, fucking hell, he's got a sword and then double handguns and just jumping up in the air and that kind of thing, where you're up in the air and you're doing moves in the air, suspended in the air. That kind of shit just looks absolutely fucking phenomenal. So I think Devil May Cry 3 is when I got into it. Yeah, like, and it was just, it's mesmerizing gameplay. And it's that replayability where you're just going, you're just progressing the story, or whatever, but then you get a C rating. You're just like, oh, I could have done better than that one. And it's just, it's easy peasy. You're just going, yeah, well, I'll just go back and do it again, you know, just do it better.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding.
And as you said, that part you said about hitting the enemies and keeping them up in the air and knocking them over and over again, they actually come up with the inspiration from that was from a bug in another Capcom game, which is Onimusha Warlords, I think. And there was a bug in that where if you kept hitting the enemy, he never got a chance to land and hit you back. He just kept hitting them up and hitting them, damaging them the whole time. And it was a bug in that game.
That's so
But then
cool.
They were like, well, fucking, that actually sounds pretty cool to kind of just kind of juggle your enemy in the air.
And jump on that, yeah.
It's a staple of so many hack and slash games. You play a modern, you know, God of War game or something along those lines, and you're kind of, you know, as long as you keep hitting them, they'll keep staying down unless they manage to block you. And it's like that. They bring this in as even in this game, when you're in the air shooting the enemies, you kind of, you know, you pause in midair
while you're shooting
them almost, you know, briefly. And it's so smooth. It's so fluid. And even though this game, like, is fucking 23 years old, like, there was so much going on the screen at once with enemies left, right, and center, but it still felt super fluid. It still felt like there wasn't much lag to it. It looked great for this many years ago. And still, from what I've from what I remember, it wasn't that long ago that I played the remake. It looked, obviously the remake looks better, but you know, so much of it isn't changed, because I looked at a comparison and it still looks fantastic. Fantastically aged compared to some other games that came out at this time, you know. Like, actually, what's interesting about this one is that Capcom had the idea for this game. It was born out of the idea for a new Resident Evil movie or game. Resident Evil 4, I suppose, would have been out the GameCube around 2002. So I guess this is, when was Resident Evil 4 out?
I think it's 2003 or 2004.
I think maybe this was the, this was kind of the idea when, one of the ideas when they were building for this, but this would have been so much of a departure from survival horror that they just scrapped the Resident Evil style parts of it and just turned it into something completely new, a new IP, basically. And like, it ended up spawning a bunch of sequels. There's even, as I said, there was that reboot. And there's just something so cool about the protagonist as well. Like, Dante is just a cool name. And then you give him this big gigantic sword, as you said, got these twin pistols, and they're named like Ebony and Ivory. He's got a shotgun. It's just
so
this,
good.
He's just, and it's all snappy one-liners and stuff like that, you know? I don't want to go into the plot too deep, because I do think people should play this. But basically, Dante has like a monster hunting business. He's almost like a private detective almost style thing. Where he gets hired to take care of some monsters, and then there's a whole thing. I'm not gonna go into it. Like, the puzzles are fairly straightforward, but most of it really is based on the action. It's so stylized. The way you can upgrade the stuff is really handy and easy to go upgrading, you know, with double jumps or extra or extra moves. It was challenging enough, you know. The boss fights were really good. Even for me, there's one time you had to fight a gigantic tarantula. I remember that, man. I fucking hated that. but I think the only bad thing I can think of is that I remember it being quite short. I don't remember exactly the time for. I do remember it being a relatively short campaign, and maybe that's why they made it more difficult. I don't know.
Maybe.
But it was received. Yeah, it was received really well. It was on a lot of people's, like a lot of the games we do for the Retro Corner, it's on a lot of people's top games of all time. You know, it's the only one that isn't kind of polluted, I think, a little bit by what they did afterwards, you know, because like the fourth one is set after the second one, and the second one was shit, you know, whereas the third one was actually pretty good. The fourth one, they added in an extra character. You know, it's a bit messy. I think that for me, the OG, this one is definitely the best. Like, I think the HD versions are out there. Definitely worth picking up. You'll probably get it on either Game Pass or on the store, PlayStation Store, I'd imagine, for relatively cheap. I would recommend playing this, even for you guys, if you fancy.
Absolutely,
going back
those HD remakes sound good, actually. Yeah, I'm gonna dive into them.
Deadly. Well, look, cool. That's us finished for the Retro Corner. And almost our episode has come to an end. So, Daz, is there anything else you'd like to touch on before we finish up?
One thing, actually. One of our listeners, Jenny, was kind and friend of the show and kind to comment on me just slurping a lot during the episode. So I have my daughter's colourful straws today in my various drinks. So, Jenny, I hope there was no slurping and gulping throughout the episode right into the fucking mic. So, fingers crossed. But yeah, it's another great episode. It's so nice to review a fucking nice movie, a good movie. And hopefully over the next few weeks, we might be hitting a run of some hot movies. Yeah. Good stuff.
I'm really looking forward to we're looking forward to next week's one. I'm not going to, we won't say what it is, because just in case something happens and we can't make it, we don't want to say what it is. But it's another new release that I am particularly looking forward to. So that's great. Listen, keep doing what you're doing, liking, subscribing, commenting. You know, any sort of engagement is great for us, because we just enjoy having the crack in the podcast and engaging with you guys. So, yeah, look, thanks for listening, and we will see you all in the next one. Take it easy.
See you later.